It's great to be a nerd. It's great to be a nerd. The only light we ever see is from our monitor.
They argue about comic books and internet connections. The biggest highlight of the year is the Star Trek convention.
Our turn wasn't big enough to sign up any stars. But we much better Richard, who was phased by a Borg.
Ben,
he knew Mr. Sulu.
What?
It's great to be a nerd. It's great to be a nerd.
Well, hello and welcome to episode 27 of Nerdcast. My name is David Redekop. I'm a co-founder, the lucky co-founder of Nerds On Site. And we have this Nerdcast once a week on Thursday mornings live at 10:15 Eastern Time. We were running a little bit late today and setting up a new profile. Thank you for joining us live or joining us after the fact using our iTunes search for a podcast, or you can also subscribe from blog.iwanttobeanerd.com where they get posted. And welcome. We have just a fantastic crowd today. I'm so excited. Not only is today a big Windows 7 day, but we have some special guests and some important voices that, you know, we've missed over the last couple of weeks. So first of all, I want to welcome a special guest, Matthew Shepard. Good to have you, Matthew.
Hi, everybody. Great to be here.
Canada does some things well. One of the things is we import the smart Brits sometimes, as we did with Matthew. Welcome to Canada, Matthew. You have your citizenship already?
Not citizenship. I'm a permanent resident, but that will be in the pipeline in the future.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, if we get more guys like you coming over here, all the power to the Brits coming over here. Just love you guys.
Thanks, David.
And we have Andy Laren, the true radio voice. Well, we have two of them on the show, but Andy is definitely the perfect radio voice in my mind's eye. Hey, Andy, good to have you.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Hey, you don't sound quite as crisp as you have in the past, but you're pretty good, pretty good. I don't know if it's a microphone thing or if it's a Skype thing. Also, we have Dennis Housenick from West Virginia. Good to have you, Dennis.
It is good to be here.
At first, we didn't think we were going to have Dennis, but we have Dennis is our security expert, resident security expert, writes our security corner as well as many of the blog posts that you see on Nerds On Site blog, nerdsonsite.com/blog. And we have Patrick from Adelaide, Australia. Good to have you, Patrick.
Good morning, everyone.
Patrick is the one who always brings us best book of the week, so we're looking forward to talking about that one. And Rob Wolf. He's the other radio voice, and he's one of our national pod leaders for Australia. Good to have you, Rob.
Good day from WA. Yeah. Hello, everybody.
And Arthur, our producer. Thanks, Arthur, for being here and making this all happen, making it work and doing the edit after the fact.
Hey, good to be here, guys.
All right, so we got a couple of really cool stories today to talk about. First of all, we start off with good news, though. I was just about to skip that, but make sure you're ready for your good news, because I'm going to go last today. Sometimes I know I'm unfair by going first and maybe stealing someone else's good news. So who wants to go first?
Sure, I'll go for it.
Excellent, Matthew.
Lots of good news in Winnipeg. Very busy week for us here. Last Friday, I was at the Winnipeg Chamber of Commerce Gala Night. I got a Rookie of the Year award, which was fantastic.
Congratulations!
Thank you very much. Lots of people got to see Nerds On Site and a nerd up on the big screen. They did a video and everything. So it was a great event and a great way to meet lots of people in business here in Winnipeg. Then this evening, we're doing an after business mixer with the Winnipeg Chamber of Commerce again. We're going to be talking to all the business owners in the area about Windows 7, social media, and those kind of things. And then on Saturday, we're doing a Phil the Beetle event at two locations.
Wow. Wow. So good stuff, busy. Matthew. Definitely. Lots of things happen in Winnipeg. Winnipeg, to me, my cross-country tour felt most like London, where I live. It was just, you know, just a real homey and comfy town, that's for sure.
Yep, all right. Like,
by default, Annie, I'm going to go in the same order for good news. So you're next. That means Dennis is after. So you guys may as well be prepared. Hey, Andy.
Not a problem. My good news for this week is tomorrow I'm doing another server install with one of our guys here in Kingston. I love getting together with the team and doing these installs together. So I can't wait. It'll be a good weekend doing a server install for one of our large companies here in Kingston, and really look forward to it. It'll be a long weekend. There's a lot to do, but it'll be really enjoyable.
Good to hear. Good to hear. By the way, those who are watching live, if you do get this after the fact, then you actually get to see the video of everybody. So live isn't quite as cool as the magic that Arthur puts into the actual podcast. Good news, Andy. Excellent. Dennis, you're up.
Hello. Well, the good news is I'm here. And, you know, sometimes you figure out that it's things that you think are going to be really complicated are just things that either aren't your problem.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah. Actually, this morning I went to a client and I was expecting a really big mess and did a little bit of testing and figured out that actually the problem was caused by a particular software program that they have and was not really a computer problem. And every time they went through a certain sequence of events with this program, everything stopped working, including their ability to print. So I was able to tell them that really they need to get some technical support from the people who wrote the software. I think maybe one of the recent Office updates had some sort of a conflict. So anyway, the end result of that was that I was able to get out of there much more quickly than I thought and join in for the Nerdcast.
Good to have you, Dennis. Good to have you. It's nice that once in a while things do work out that way, for sure. Mr. Patrick Brown.
Hello from down under. Very good news. I did a Windows 7 install for a client today, and it went off absolutely flawlessly. It improved the speed of their, I think it was an Intel quad-core computer from 2 years ago with Windows XP on it, which it was running kind of okay. Now the computer really whips along. But the thing about this client is someone that I've built a close business / personal relationship with, and she's very happy with us as a company. And her bookkeeper came in and she goes, "Oh, you're the nerd that she's been telling me all about." And the bookkeeper had two laptops with her. "Can you fix this laptop while I'm working on that one?" Wow. Can you give me a stack of cards? I go to into people's businesses. My job is to go and do their books, and I want to distribute your cards for you. I'm like, wow, awesome. Yeah. You know, this awesome. is where networking really starts to kick off, and I was just blown away. And so that's my good news.
Word of mouth is the best.
No question very good about news. That. No question. Patrick, that's a rock solid way to build a business. No question about that. Mr. Rob Wolf, we'd love to hear your good news as well.
Oh, well, first up, glad to be back on again. Very, very excited. Yeah. Missed it all, so good to be back. I suppose the biggest news is we've got Charlie coming over, our CEO of Nerds on Site. He's due over next week. That's massive news and good for us all down under. And also got Adelaide boys, Patrick, and also Simon coming over to Perth as well to visit Charlie while he's here as well, which is great.
Oh, yeah.
And other than that, we've had two new nerds start with us in the last week that we've invited on board, one over in Melbourne and another one in Perth. So, yeah, very exciting indeed.
Always full of good news, Rob. Always. And I know of good news that you aren't even mentioning because there's so much of it, but I know that there's a first release of some of the software that's being demoed tomorrow, right? At least that's what Mark tells me, so...
Oh, okay. Well, actually, you've learned something before I did. So there you go. That's like meta news.
Well, I just checked real quick this morning our team in India to make sure that, you know, things were on track, and I got the thumbs up. So apparently it's on track tomorrow.
Well, that's good. That's a software application for everybody. Just know.
That's right. Yeah.
A client in Perth who took us on board to write an application from scratch, actually, of a... just a toolbox application. And yeah, so I've been doing development work for them for a couple of months, so it's really come along nicely, which is good.
Excellent. All right, last but not least, Arthur.
Hey, all. Hey, well, guess what? I'm now an expert in Amazon EC2.
Yeah!
been spending a few hours on it this last week, and so if any of you want to learn more about deploying servers on the cloud, I mean, I'm definitely here.
Yeah.
Definitely here to help.
And when Arthur says expert, he's being quite humble about it because he really knows that already inside out. And it's a very exciting project that's going to be a large-scale project, a very public international event that soon I'll be able to talk more about in more detail. But we found that the best way to deploy the amount of horsepower we required for the amount of traffic that this one particular site would get hit on all in one day was to deploy a bunch of servers on EC2 because it's just a one-day event. Why get a whole bunch of new hardware, deploy it at our data center facility, and then not have use for it immediately thereafter? Didn't make any sense. So this is a perfect cloud computing exercise. And we'll make sure all the nerds everywhere know exactly how it went, what the ingredients were to make it right. And it's using some really cool advanced software from IBM. And looking forward to more results. I think we can talk to you about that in about 3 weeks from today. So that should be fun.
Sounds great.
It right. really is amazing, eh, that Amazon is the one to come to market with this. And
yeah.
You don't hear of IBM or Microsoft or any of these other big companies, an e-retailer coming to the market with it.
I know, isn't that interesting? I think they had to basically provide an environment of their own for themselves. I mean, it's kind of like the natural progression for RAF. I mean, it took a lot of visionary leadership on behalf of our CEO Charlie to make it happen. But still, it was a software package that we built for ourselves, for Nerds on Site, yeah, to be able to run globally. It made perfect sense that we would make that available to our clients as well. And I think the same sort of natural progression happened with Amazon in with their infrastructure, that they needed to continue to expand. And they said, hey, this makes perfect sense. Every customer is going to potentially need to, you know, deploy some computing horsepower on demand. And it's brilliant how it works. Just awesome. All right. Well, my good news is that I got a local radio station that we have built a good relationship with over the years. Just called me up this morning and wanted to have a Windows 7 interview. And so I said, sure, absolutely. And actually, I just posted it on nerdsonsite.com/blog. So I just recorded my end of the video and with the audio stream coming through the computer. So that's why there's the video of just me and not of the actual radio host. So anyway, we have lots of opportunity like that. The media always wants to engage, and it's very easy to become a professional if we treat them professionally and always give them valuable new stuff. They'll return the favor and have us involved in sharing technology news on, you know, mainstream media. All kinds of good stuff. Speaking of Windows 7, it's the real deal. It's here, and we're all excited, nerds in general. Or what are you guys thinking? Am I the only one who is kind of excited, even though I'm a Mac user?
Oh, no. Like I said, my end client, you know, she, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where, you know, we get our feedback from. She was deliriously happy. Her machine and was at least 4 times faster. I mean, people's mileage is going to vary when they upgrade older hardware with Windows 7, but yeah, her machine is better than it ever was, and she's deliriously happy. So yeah, and it went together without a hitch. But that was fully deleting the hard drive, you know, wipe and reload, and then putting Windows 7 on top, not an upgrade.
Right. Those of you confused about how Patrick could have done this already, I mean, he lives in the future, you know. In Australia, it's already almost. Actually, it is past midnight for you, isn't it, Patrick?
It is past midnight, so it's actually the 23rd now, not the 22nd.
Right.
And our local supplier had stocks for the last week anyway.
Wow.
And the word that's come down from them and from a number of people I've spoken to, they are selling mostly Windows 7 Professional. Windows Ultimate is not a big seller because there's not much. There's some encryption on there and there's some multi-language support, but that's it. So not a lot of people are going for that option. And yeah, so Windows 7 Professional seems to be the way to go.
Yeah. On the screen here, yeah, I'm just showing a rolling Twitter feed here. These are obviously tweets that they have specifically selected. But it's kind of interesting. That's actually a good way to do marketing for Microsoft. Good on them. Sorry, I cut somebody off here. Dennis?
Oh, no, I was going to say the ultimate version is for people with TechNet subscriptions.
Oh, yes.
Because I don't think anybody wants to pay the additional for the ultimate version.
That's right. That's right. somebody sent out this Windows 7 Whopper. Burger King Japan is selling Windows 7 burgers. So that's seven patties on a burger.
Oh,
my word. Is this for real?
That's a heart attack waiting there.
It's being tweeted everywhere. I know that. I've seen heaps of tweets coming through for it.
Well, whether it's real or not, this is not only good for Microsoft, but I'm sure it's good for Burger King. Even if we're not out there looking forward to that heart attack, it's still a great approach.
Well, it's 777 yen down the bottom there. So,
Wow, I'm sure there's a currency somewhere where it would be 7,777,777, maybe in Zimbabwe dollars or something like that.
Yeah, but only for 5 minutes.
Right. So that's right. They'd have to have like an electronic sign of the price as it increases. Oh, man.
So is it 13 centimeters high and 113 grams?
Oh,
113 grams of beef.
Wow.
Or
you can read that?
I can read some basic Japanese. I spent 5 years in Japan. So it's 133 grams of beefu.
Oh, I see the number in there now. 113G and 13cm for centimeters, right?
Yeah.
That makes sense. I can read that Japanese too, Patrick.
But there's I'm just reading the characters after that. Bifu. I can read that part.
All right. Now, Andy Laren, you were excited about the new Mightier Mac Mini. Tell us why.
Well, I think it's just an amazing idea that Apple put out there. So the new machines that came out this week, they came out with a new iMac using some of the new processors, new MacBook. But the Mac Minis, they revamped as well and then put out a new Mac Mini with Snow Leopard server. So this actually comes with two 500 gig, 2.5-inch, 5400 RPM hard drives. So they've taken out the optical drive in order to fit it in there. So if you do want an optical drive, you have to order an external optical drive, USB driven. I'm not clear on is whether it looks like what it comes with by default is that these things are in RAID 1. It's giving you a terabyte RAID 0. So striping rather than RAID 1 mirroring.
Wow.
Which I find a little odd that they would do it that way. However, it looks like that's what the default is. I don't have one yet, but the amazing thing with it is that it comes with OS X server Snow Leopard, which is like a $500 purchase.
Yeah. So
this thing is $10.99 Canadian, $9.99 US, but it comes with a $500 operating system. So that's quite a deal. 2.53 gigahertz. So the equivalent model in the Mac Mini without the dual hard drives, of course, is $8.99. So you're really only paying a couple of $100 extra. And you're getting the two hard drives instead of one 320, and you're getting the server software. So quite amazing, I think. Obviously not for really large businesses, but for small businesses where they've got a little file server, this would certainly be a good replacement. And it does everything else that that a file server wouldn't do, mail and wikis and all that sort of stuff that you normally would have to buy SBS for. And because it's the Snow Leopard server, it's unlimited licenses. So, I mean, you're not going to run 100 users off this thing, but you could run 15, 20 users. And if you're going SBS, you're paying $500 for an extra 5-pack of cals. So,
sure,
pretty amazing deal.
Yeah, that's the big bugaboo with SBS server is the server or the license cals.
Yeah. And 2008 SBS is much higher than 2003 was. So, Microsoft is really getting competition here.
So really today a small business then has a really very price point attractive option with a back end of Apple server as opposed to Microsoft. So they're really completely flipping the tables. I mean, normally when a business owner or a consumer thinks of Apple, they're thinking premium price, double the price, but you also get a better quality physical hardware product. Now we're talking about a fraction of the price of an equivalent Microsoft solution and the complete Mac backend server solution. That really is a very interesting approach of doing this. Very exciting at the same time, because at the end, the biggest winner is the consumer or the business owner, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Do you know, Andy, if you can reconfigure the drives to use RAID 1 instead of RAID 0?
I imagine so. Once you get into the OS, I think you can probably use disk utility created as RAID 1, but I'm not sure how it ships. That's the thing that I'm not sure of. Of course, you can always change that later, but I'm not sure how it ships, whether they're just two straight 500 gig drives. They're advertising it on some of the boxes that I've seen. They're advertising it as a terabyte of space. So I don't know whether they're actually showing up as two 500 gig drives, or if they're showing up as one large terabyte drive, so RAID 0 in striping. But I mean, what I would obviously do with this is run it as RAID 1, mirroring 500 gigs is a pretty decent amount of space. You can always add more hard drives out the back. Apple even advertises it that, you know, they've if you go to order it, they offer a 4 terabyte RAID 5 external from Promise.
Right.
Offering with it out the FireWire 800. So, you know, it's going to be nice and fast. So, you know, that's what I would certainly do is run the run it as mirror. And then if you need more storage, add the storage later. But, you know, obviously we would never want to put it in where one drive would go down and wipe out their server.
Yeah, well, one of the things that you could do, I know Arthur wants to jump in here as well, but one of the things I know you could do with the gigabit Ethernet port and saying something like a Drobo Pro, that's external.
Yeah.
You could have the vast majority of your important storage being on a Drobo Pro that doesn't really have a whole lot of dependency on the Mac Mini server. Sorry, Arthur, you go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to mention mostly what Andy mentioned as well, because they don't actually advertise RAID on the Mac Mini server page. So I'm thinking it's just two straight drives, right? Yeah. It's not Stripe. But that's it.
Yeah, it's just the way that they're advertising it on the box. It says 1 terabyte. So, you know, it almost leads you to look like it may be a Stripe, but I doubt it. I think that probably what they're going to do, because again, they don't want the support question. So I think that it'll probably show up as two 500 gig drives, and then you've got the option of changing that, but then you'd have to reload the OS.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think that many people would need the performance of RAID 0 and would be much better off with two separate drives anyway.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's a mistake on Apple's part not to pre-configure it that way. I mean, it's only software RAID, but to pre-configure it using RAID, one drive dies, you know, it warns the users that a drive has died, and then they replace it, but there's no downtime, of course. So that's obviously the way to go.
Yeah,
I mean, even if you're using external RAID for all of your secure data, that's fine and dandy, but it's the downtime as well. So if the OS is running off of the 500s, you just don't want the downtime.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, presumably Time Machine, I have not seen a Snow Leopard server, but presumably Time Machine is in there as a service and runs all the time. So, yeah, you wouldn't really not likely be in a state of having lost much, if any, data, but the downtime is a good point.
Yeah.
Very good point.
Well, I mean, any workstations even that a client where they can't have downtime, I always suggest at least RAID 1 just, you know, for the simple fact that you're spending another $150, let's say, for the additional hard drive. And I've had lots of clients thank me afterwards because one drive has gone down. It takes a day to get a new one replaced under warranty, but there's zero downtime. And, I mean, the downtime is the killer. So, you know, people that are making $1,000 a day and they go down for a day, what's $150?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, one of the things I find is that people sometimes get a little bit of a sense of false security when they have that RAID. You know, you always have to make sure you warn them. It's protecting you against drive failure. It's not protecting you against data corruption. So you still have to do your backups with due diligence.
Yeah, you have rated corruption.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
You'll have redundant corruption.
Well, isn't that kind of what happened with the with the Yahoo Sidekick service, that the corruption became redundant.
I think that was.
I feel sorry for the guys. I mean, nowadays business continuity is just. I mean, the good thing that's come out of that and stories like it. You know, we've had issues happen within our own data center that Dennis is very well aware of. And sometimes what happens is a scare has to happen for folks to really make business continuity a very, very important topic. You know, just getting insurance isn't enough sometimes. You have to ensure that it doesn't happen to begin with. So anyway, that's really exciting, and we should make sure all nerds are aware of this as an option. And those of you in the chat, you're welcome to provide additional feedback, and we'll try to catch some of that right on the show as well. But Dennis, our security expert, sent in a couple of links that I think we should talk to, because this show really is all about making sure that that security topics that we should be aware of today are communicated to our team and would-be team members. This is Nerdcast, so it's designed for nerds on our team as well as wannabe nerds. If you want to get to know us a little bit, this is one of the forums that you can join us. And by the way, you can join us every Thursday live at nerdsonsite.tv. Tokenization versus end-to-end encryption. Talk to us about this. You know, you may have to use some normal speak, Dennis, so that we get it.
Well, and it's actually these concepts are not difficult. And this is a controversy within the PCI industry right now. These are two new technologies, and they're not new technologies, but two new implementations designed to better protect credit card data and just things that we ought to be aware of. They're not things that are normally implemented at the SME level. Tokenization simply refers to the notion that, well, let's not store or transmit credit card numbers at all. Let's create a token, which is another random series of numbers to represent that, and those are only tied together at one point. And then all the transmission and all the other processing uses the token. Pretty simple concept, really. You wonder why it took so long to bring it to bear, although implementation-wise, it's a little bit complicated to try to figure out how that works. And then the other idea is end-to-end encryption. We're very familiar with that concept just through the use of VPNs, which are basically end-to-end encryption. In the credit card processing industry, what happens at this point is there are points along the way where the information is decrypted, processed, then re-encrypted. So the notion is, well, let's eliminate some of the vulnerabilities by encrypting it all the way from one end to the other. So these are more interesting in terms of the general concepts, because these are things that we're going to see more of. And as they're implemented in the payment card industry, we're also going to see these filter down into other security technologies, because they are ways of protecting information more efficiently.
Okay. Good article. I mean, I've just had a chance to glance at it overall, but I think it is important for us to understand some of the overall concepts, and Security Now is a really good source to for podcasts to understand encryption better, because that's what allows us to give customer additional degree of confidence whenever we want to explain in normal speak why giving us their credit card, for example, on our secure website is secure. Because with SSL, there's end-to-end encryption, right? And our authentication, that requires, tokenization. This is a token, right? This is a one-time password device, the YubiKey that we've standardized to. So, yeah, we can talk about both of these concepts in very, very normal speak terms for our clients. Good one. Next one, I think you also sent in, Dennis, ex-Ford engineer charged with trade secret theft. Suspect allegedly stole trade secrets after accepting job with a competing Chinese company.
Yeah, and you know, I put that in there just as a reminder, because we work with a lot of SMEs, and SMEs tend to have pretty high amount of trust in their employees, and they tend to be kind of family atmosphere.
Right.
And I always encounter resistance when I suggest maybe that internal security maybe should be tightened up a little bit. It's always a matter of, oh, well, we all work together. We're one happy family. We trust each other. But, on a corporate scale, we can see that this has had, some pretty far-reaching consequences for Ford, or at least potentially. And so, you know, I just think it's a good reminder to, you know, remind even our SME clients that, you know, employees do come and go, relationships change over the course of time, and maybe everyone should not have access to all the information that in the company unless they really need it to do their job. You know, what we call the principle of least privilege. Basically, you should have access to the information you need to do your job and not anything more.
Right.
So that's why I put this one in here, just as a kind of reminder that, you know, a lot of times we look to the outside threats, but we don't think about the people in our company that may come and go and may take information with them that we would like to keep in-house.
Yeah, very good point, Dennis. Very good point. I mean, yesterday I had a call from a client of ours who was very concerned about one staff member and what may or may not have happened. And this person may be terminated. And the question was all around, well, what data does she have access to, or he? What information can we make sure is secured on the laptop? And then in asking for the questions, it turns out that this was a laptop that this person brought in that was his or her own. I mean, I don't even know who this is, but these are just questions that was brought in from home. And therefore, you know, none of the corporate policies had ever been applied to it. There was no actual backup on it. So email was being pulled in via, you know, POP3. And so there are lots of warning signs when that kind of thing happens. And Dennis is a good reminder that we got to make sure that that we're always current on everything. Hey, Scoot, so all right, you know that Andy Scoot's in our chat, so he knows Andy already. Andy, don't know if you're watching the chat or not, but he's in here checking you out.
No, I wasn't watching the chat.
Well, there you go. Now you know. Apparently, you're meeting with him today, so that's good to know. This is what this show is for, is for folks who are potentially looking to join the team, is to find out what we are for real. You know.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, one last comment on that last story is it ties back also to the server because – you know, one of the things, you know, that SMEs tend to ask is, well, why do I need a server? You know, what's wrong with what I'm doing now? And one of the main reasons to put a server in is because you can then consolidate all the important information in one place, and then you can easily control who accesses that information. And really the only way you can do that is by putting it in one place where you can control the access to it. So that's you know, one of the first questions. You know, people say, well, I don't know that I want to spend that much money on a server. We have a lot of SME clients who have, you know, 4, 5, 6 workstations who should be working off of a server who aren't. Yep. So between that information and the new Apple server that maybe will make that a little bit more affordable, maybe we'll go out and talk to some clients some more about doing that.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And forensically, it's very difficult to prove somebody's taking things off-site unless you have something like a server that logs that sort of information. If it's just on their own workstation, very difficult to prove that sort of thing unless you catch them red-handed with the USB key that's full of this stuff. But it's not clear in this article how they caught this guy. Other than he went to another competitor and said that he had this information, so that could be where it came from. But you know, on Ford's end, they may not have caught it until it was, you know, too late. You know, they need to put in these checks and balances to see if somebody has too much access, basically, and is able to get at things and copy them off without proper logging.
Yeah.
And one of the things that the security team is going to be rolling out to offer to clients very soon is some very good endpoint protection. Basically, endpoint security is controlling those devices, things like USB drives and optical drives, and their ability to move information on and off of them.
Yeah. Excellent. Good point. And on that topic, actually, you know, Astaro, that we're big fans of, they have increased their free home user license from 10 devices to 50. And I know many of us didn't use the free version because we were way past 10 devices inside of our home network. And this allows us to, once again, focus on making sure we know this product. And that's an excellent endpoint security, I'm sure Dennis, security device appliance, I'm sure Dennis would agree.
It
offers so many different things that are so easily administered. So We're huge Astaro fans. Thank you, Astaro, for increasing it to 50, because what that does for us as nerds is allows every nerd to have no excuse, no reason why not to run it in their own lab, in their own environment, and thereby, you know, becoming much better educated, much more familiar with the product, and in a better position to provide it as a full service and sales solution to our customers. All right, next one. This is the last article from Dennis. Full disk encryption do's and don'ts. Good timing, since what was your announcement last night, Arthur, about full disk encryption?
I didn't have any announcement about full disk encryption, but TrueCrypt version 6.3 was announced.
That's what it was.
Yes,
I knew there was. Yesterday. I knew there was something important from you, Arthur. So
yeah.
So I'm sure this applies. Talk to us about this, Dennis.
Right, and actually, TrueCrypt is my tool of choice for full disk encryption. It implements very easily, and it's very secure, and it does not slow down the system. You know, this is a fairly long article, but the interesting part about it was, or the important part about it, I think, was just it talked a little bit about the relative advantages and disadvantages of full disk encryption versus file or folder level encryption. And it's not necessarily a one-size-fits-all. I'm kind of a fan of full disk encryption, although there are some limitations. One of them to bear in mind is that, you know, when you're using full disk encryption, it does not account for any data that leaves the hard drive. So if you're putting things onto a USB drive to move them around from place to place, or even if you're burning them onto a CD, you still need to have some folder or file level encryption if you want to protect that data. Also, data that is being transmitted across any kind of a link is not encrypted by full drive encryption. This just gives you some good points on how to properly implement it, how to protect yourself so that, you know, if you forget the password, you're able to retrieve that data. Another thing that I'm aware of is I use full drive encryption on my MacBook, but I was a little concerned because I usually don't turn it off. I mean, I close the lid and put it in my bag and carry it around. And one thing about full drive encryption is, as long as that machine is on, it provides no protection. It's only protected once the computer is powered down and then powered back on. So, you know, any really sensitive data that you have on your computer, if you're not if you're in the habit of leaving it on when you transport it, which I know I am, and a lot of other people do that on a regular basis, you may also need to employ some sort of folder or file level encryption to ensure that that information is protected.
Yeah, good point. Good point. You could always unmount the device. I don't know if there's such a thing as unmounting it if your data is just on the encryption on the encrypted drive. But I guess if you're doing the whole drive, then that's not possible. Never mind.
Right. So. Yeah. No. It's great when once you power on right at boot, it asks for the password and it's very secure in that sense. But like I said, it doesn't kick in until you power it down. So I just, as a matter of habit, don't normally keep any really sensitive data on my laptop anyway. I actually keep it on a USB drive that is encrypted. That way I can mount it on any computer that I want to and access to it. So that's where I keep most of my sensitive stuff. But it's just, you know, it's the sort of thing you have to have a data management program, and you have to help clients develop a data management program. And, you know, that's a bit of a process, because you have to really go through and analyze where the data is, where it goes, who should access it. And it just becomes more important, each year as time goes by, because, you know, we depend more and more on computers to store our sensitive data. Most of it is, or a great deal of it is now stored electronically as opposed to on paper in a locked filing cabinet. And so we just then need to be constantly vigilant about making sure that people understand, you know, how to keep that data protected and control access to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Man, every time I listen to Dennis, my degree of concern and of commitment to protecting data just always goes up a notch. So thank you for that, Dennis. And I think that should go to our team as a whole to make sure that there's more thought put into where and how data resides, how and where it transfers to, who can possibly come in contact with. All of those things should be top of mind for us, because to the customer, they shouldn't have to worry about it, right? Just like when I drive my car, I only worry about the key fitting, being able to turn it, and that I can step on the gas pedal and brake pedal. I mean, that's what matters to me. Everything else shouldn't, and our customers shouldn't have to worry about it either, but we have to be the ones who are vigilant and constantly bringing that up as a concern and constantly asking intelligent questions that steer us in the right direction with the customer. Oh, my word. We have another crash. Okay. Well, good thing is that Arthur actually has a backup plan in place for today.
Oh, backup plans are always good.
Speaking of backups. All right. So we have the live video, right? We got that camera and he did screen flow on the NOS Pro box. So, all right. I guess the new profile didn't fix this thing.
In conclusion, what I want to say is that you want all your clients to feel when a laptop is lost or stolen, and we all know how often that happens every day. Thousands of hours a day get lost or stolen. That their concern is over the loss of the hardware, which is usually it's upsetting, but it's we're talking anywhere from $500 to $1,000 typically, unless they have a high-end laptop, and that they're not laying awake at night worrying about what kind of information was on that laptop and what kind of hands it may have fallen into.
Right.
Well, exactly. There was a study that was done that on average, it's $197 per record that's lost. So if you figure, you lose a laptop, $1,000, no big deal. If you've got more than five records, so I mean, any database, of course, would have more than five records if you've got it on your machine. Harley Davidson had a loss, and it was like $3 million for them because they had to go and notify all these people. There was lots of different things that were involved to make up that $197. So, I mean, it just doesn't make sense to have anything on your machine that's not encrypted, just for that fact. And then there's lots of untangible things that you have no idea, like the reputation of the company. Those are the sorts of things you can't put a price on. You have no idea what the future of that company could have been if this sort of thing hadn't happened. So and just to add to what you were saying about TrueCrypt, I love TrueCrypt. I use it all the time. But BitLocker has some really nice features too that can be implemented in especially in a server environment, where you can turn on BitLocker on USB devices, makes it very easy for USB devices to have the BitLocker. The only problem is that BitLocker isn't cross-platform, so you can't use it on any other operating system besides Windows. Right. But whereas with TrueCrypt, of course, you can. But the nice thing with BitLocker is that you can do group policies where you say people can't copy data off of the server unless it goes to a BitLocker USB device. So anybody inside the network, their USB keys have to be BitLockered in order for them to copy data off, for that very reason that you lose a USB key, so what, $20-$30, but it's the data that's on the USB key that's worth the money. So some very, very nice features with BitLocker in that respect. Obviously, though, I really do like the TrueCrypt. One other point, too, that you were mentioning earlier about powering your machine down. Forensically, if your machine isn't completely powered down, you could do live responses on machines, and you've got full drive encryption, but so what? If the machine is booted up, you can do a live response, copy all the data, everything that's there. And also the Hibernate file. Even if you hibernate a machine, if you don't have full drive encryption, anything that was in memory, you can get out of that Hibernate file. So any of the drives that are mounted, anything that's in memory, you can extract that through that hibernation file. So forensically, it's very good if you've got a suspect's drive and you want to get data off of it. But the bad guys can also do the same sort of thing. They can get the same sort of software and extract data out of a hibernation file. So warning out there.
Good point, Dan. Andy, I'm just so glad that you're constantly referring to forensics. And I think this is going to become much more of an issue as people continue to grow their volume of data that they have everywhere and only finding out afterwards that they're concerned about forensics. So we should be thinking about this proactively and talking about it out loud a lot more. And by the way, in the chat, we're talking, Dennis, about that being your security dog. Since you're all focused on security, that must be part of your perimeter security is the dog.
Yeah, he's pretty good perimeter security. I keep trying unplugging the microphone or cutting it up, trying to keep him off the podcast. But, yeah, he gets awfully agitated when somebody walks down the street in front of the house. Yeah. Well, anyway, we were talking about Astaro, and one of the things that that we should talk about is that VPN technology does allow you to also keep your data safe at home on your home network and then access it through the VPN as another way of securing it and not having to carry it around with you.
That's right. Yeah, good point. Good point. I'm loving OpenVPN. Arthur set up OpenVPN for us to facilitate the life-size gear. We have a video conferencing room, the one that I'm in right now, with nice flags for background that runs life-size gear. And in order for people to, because it's zip-based, in order for people to connect, we didn't want to deal with NAT issues, network address translation problems, and SIP. And so we said, all right, anybody who wants to be on the conference has to go over VPN. So Arthur, inside of about 30 seconds, deployed an OpenVPN service, and the client is free and now easy to deploy. If you do the whole thing from scratch, I think it's difficult, but there is, you have to talk to Arthur if you want to do it the easy way. But it's cheap; it's like $10 or something like that.
Yeah, even I do that all for my clients as well.
Do you?
Untangle.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
Servers that built in Untangle, and
that's
all
right.
My clients are all maintained through OpenVPN. Don't have any of the RDP protocol like the 3389 open or anything like that.
Right.
I'll have my clients actually log in through OpenVPN first before they access their remote desktop, etc.
Good point.
As well.
Good point.
Yeah, very, very secure that way.
I did the same thing for Charlie, right? And set him up his at his house, Untangle VPN, so that he could very easily just make a connection. In fact, he runs Viscosity as a client, and Viscosity just keeps a persistent VPN to his.
Yeah, it's great. That's what
and it's brilliant.
Fantastic.
And it's not password-based. It's certificate-based. So it allows you to truly be open about it and say, hey, this is my IP address. This is my open VPN, and be transparent about it and still be secure. That's what I like about that environment. It's brilliant.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I have to say as well that I've been working with a client with Untangle and OpenVPN, and the latest version, not the beta, just their latest version, works on Windows 7 flawlessly, and that's really cool too.
Right. Yeah, Brian Bell in the chat just reminded me that one of the reasons that we put the VPN in too is so that Charlie could see his cameras, right? That way he can access them from anywhere in the world, but not be worried that they're exposed to anyone else, right? Because he has to make the VPN connection first. That's how you achieve a security, not through obscurity, but by doing it properly. So works really well. We had some other submissions here. I'm not sure if where these came from, but anything about a BlackBerry? They're yours. All right. Excellent. Can a BlackBerry watch succeed where Spot watches failed? Oh, that's interesting. I have not looked at any of these, just so you know. So I'll be pleasantly surprised if there's some exciting stuff here.
Well, I'm an iPhone user, but I like getting some of these stories out of left field. And if I was a BlackBerry user, because I'm a nerd, I might go for something like this. The BlackBerry Watch. Now, I actually don't know what a Spot Watch was. It never got to the Australian market. But this one here, the BlackBerry Watch, makes a Bluetooth connection to your BlackBerry. You can leave it in your pocket, and as you're driving along, pertinent information pops up on this watch. Besides the time, you get some little notifications of maybe the caller ID, few other things.
Oh, nice.
That kind of thing. You can just, instant messages, maybe PIN stuff. I don't know. But you can just glance at these things just popping up on your watch. Safer, better. Certainly nerdy. will it kick off in the market? I don't know. it might just be easy to pull your BlackBerry out, or do BlackBerry users mount theirs on the dash? Like I mount my iPhone on there, it's all hands-free and everything. Right. I'm not sure. Yep. I'm not sure how. Yeah. David, you're a BlackBerry user, aren't you?
I absolutely am. In fact, I'm showing it on the camera right now. If you're wondering what is that, it is a skinned BlackBerry with the Canadian flag on the front, so it's all red except the keys and the screen. And then on the back, I have the Nerdmobile. So this way, if I am in public and I'm talking on my phone, people are like, what's that? You know, it just gets a little extra little bit of attention, just a little bit of marketing. So it can never hurt. There's $6 a piece, uniqueskins.com. And Brian Bell in the chat is asking where his is. It's in my car, okay? I'll bring it to you on Friday. I'm seeing you on Friday morning, Brian. That's tomorrow. And I'll have it with me so you can do yours as well. No, these are great. $6, uniqueskins.com. And you can build, design your own. You preview it right on the screen and you order it. It's
fantastic.
It's a steal.
Do you just upload the file and,
yeah.
And
they, that's it. Now, the flag was actually a template. But the Nerdmobile for the back, I had to upload. So there you go.
Did you have to resize it at all, or they do all of that?
They do all of that for you. In fact, it was Nathan who did it for me. Arthur may have done it as well. I don't know if you have Arthur.
Nope.
No? Okay.
Ooh, ordering it now.
Quick, away they go. Yeah, well, I've got my iPhone here, David, and yeah. If I flick it around on my video, which you will see later.
Yes.
It has a red gel case on there, which matches my red top. And so I've told my wife, well, look, men can accessorize, can colorize, you know, it's, you know, she's still not convinced, but, you know.
Warning. I had a red wrapper on mine and I had to take it off because I noticed very strangely that the Wi-Fi signal was reduced more and more and more until eventually my Wi-Fi radio died. Now, fortunately, Apple replaced the iPhone for me under warranty, and then this is before I knew what was doing it. So I put the skin back on, and the same thing happened. So now I don't use it anymore because it seems to heat up the Wi-Fi radio, and eventually it becomes defective.
Wow.
So just be careful if it's a skin that contains the heat of a battery. Maybe I'm also a very heavy user. I tether it a lot. So I've noticed that when I tether it, it gets hot much faster. And I don't use Bluetooth because I figure, hey, if it gets hot when I'm using the cable, imagine how much hotter it would get if I tethered over Bluetooth. So I leave the Bluetooth off and just cable it.
It's because you use those aluminum skins.
Okay, there's a joke in there somewhere.
The Faraday cage aluminum skin.
All right, you'll have to explain it to me later. Folks, if you're wondering, you know, who is this David Redekop guy? I don't get a lot of things. Sometimes if I'm laughing, if it's not really sincere, you got to ask yourself, did he really get it? I learned English when I was 16 years old, okay? So a lot of this culture stuff is still, I'm still learning. But anyway, at least I don't waste any time in front of TV like a bunch of you.
Well, I mean, here's me wasting time in front of BlackBerry stuff, and I'm gonna
that I'm guilty of.
but I thought this article is actually quite a serious one. I thought it was amazing. Again, not being a BlackBerry user, I wasn't really sure what a pin was all about until I read this article. I've seen nerds publish their pins to one another so they can communicate.
Right.
Do you want to quickly speak to that, David, before we go into the rest of the article? What a pin is, how it works? And
well, actually, contrary to popular belief, sending a pin back and forth if you're on Bez is not that secure because Bez itself decrypts it and stores pin messages or can store and archive pin messages. But just the very nature of the way BlackBerry or Research in Motion designed the BlackBerry communication, it was intended for military grade right from the start. So number one concern on the foundation of RIMS was security, and then functionality was built on top of that. You'll notice that with the iPhone, it's the opposite. number one functionality. Number one is functionality, and then security is an afterthought. That's why I'm very careful what kind of information is on the iPhone. In fact, until the very latest update to the iPhone, even if you had it password protected, if you hooked up your USB cable to it, you could still access the storage on it, right? Your pictures and everything else. Now you're actually required to enter a password, but that goes to show how long have they been on the market, and only now have they figured out how to secure that. So just keep in mind that if it's military-grade security, the bad guys are going to want the same degree of security so that they can't be sniffed out. Makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So this article is just saying up in Canada where banking organizations who wanted to track messages, of course, said, well, this is not appropriate. We can't track these messages internally in our company, so you may not use this technology. And so the thieves picked up where, you know, where corporate left off and said, well, hey, this is a fantastic technology. We can't be tracked. And jokingly at the end of the article, it's saying that, you know, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, who are famous for, what do? They always get their man. It may be a lot more difficult for them. You know, the RCMP motto there may be heading to the delete bin.
Right.
You know, because they may not get their man after all.
Right.
So, as we know, organized crime is very intelligent these days in terms of technology. And so it's becoming a very much a cat and mouse game between the authorities and technology savvy criminal groups.
Yep. Good point. It's a cat and mouse game that just keeps on getting stronger. That's for sure.
I mean, you can do the same sort of thing with other technologies using certificates and encrypting email.
Right.
But it's just not as easy to do. Whereas on BlackBerry, it's just built in. You go and buy a phone, and 2 minutes later, you know, after it's activated, you're able to do this.
Right.
And that's of course, why they're able to do this so easily.
It's enforceable, right? Yeah. The nice thing about the BlackBerry is you can enforce it right from the get-go. You can literally hand someone a BlackBerry that is completely controlled through the enterprise server, that they can't do a single thing that they shouldn't do, and everything that is done is tracked, absolutely everything, at the centralized end. So it would make sense that organized crime would have that centralized control over, hey, you get this BlackBerry, I control what you do with it, and I can watch what you do with it, but the cops can't. I mean, it just, you know, it makes sense. It makes sense that they would.
Now, was
they're getting more organized.
Yeah.
They're getting more organized. Was it the iPhone or the BlackBerry or both that can be remote deleted as well? Was that something Arthur did?
That's a beautiful thing. They all can now. Sorry, Matthew, did you want to say something?
No, sorry.
Oh, no worries. No worries. But yeah, both devices. You haven't said much, Matthew. You're the guest here today.
I'm taking it all in. I'm in awe of all this tech talk.
No. Don't get too much awe of the tech stuff. You know, get in awe of how it can apply to our clients. That's something that we got to get in awe about, because at the end of the day, you'll notice that, you know, in Nerds on Site leadership, we are absolutely crazy fanatical about the customer and the customer experience. The tech stuff, we can talk about that behind the scenes, and we can discuss things like this, but as long as when we're in front of customers, we translate it to normal speak, that's what it's all about. Otherwise, we're just a bunch of mechanics who don't serve customers. But no, you can now remotely wipe both the iPhone and the BlackBerry's had it since day one, I'm quite certain. But the iPhone added that, I think, in even in 2.0. Wasn't that possible already?
I'm not sure. I think Arthur probably know better than that. But I believe one of you guys lost their phone in the last 6 months. Yeah. And Arthur was able to remote erase that for you quite easily, I think.
I had mine stolen, and I was able to do that. Oh, you know what that was? That was because I was using ActiveSync at the time, so it was an ActiveSync. It was built in there. What Apple did with version 3.0 is they added that functionality to MobileMe, so even people that are not on a corporate exchange environment can do that as well. That's what's new in 3.0, I believe.
From what I've read, though, it's not near as robust as it is on a BlackBerry. BlackBerry, it works off the pin, which is built right into the hardware.
Yeah.
So the moment they power it back on and it gets onto a network, doesn't matter what SIM is on there, as long as it gets onto a network, it gets destroyed. Whereas with iPhone, the way that it works is that it's built in, it's based on the SIM card. So what I read, I remember reading a long time ago, that you can defeat it by somebody powers your unit off immediately, pulls the SIM card out, and then puts in a different SIM, then they can retrieve all of the data off of it that they want to. So the SIM itself is what holds it back. Of course, then they can't make long-distance calls and charge it to you, but they could get your data. And then with the Mobile Me, apparently you can shut that off too. There's an option where you can shut that tracking off right in the options as a feature to you. You can shut that off. So it's not near as robust, whereas with the BlackBerries, there's no way of stopping it. As soon as you turn it back on and it gets onto a network, it gets wiped.
There you go.
And the nice thing too.
Yep.
Sorry. The nice thing too with wiping it when you're using Bez is that you can wipe the thing, and let's say somebody, one of your corporate clients, somebody stole my phone, can you wipe this for me? This has happened to me before, where they've called me and said, can you wipe it? So I wiped theirs remotely. And then 2 hours later, they find it. It was under the car. So, I just found my phone. Is it garbage now? Do I have to go and buy a new phone? No, of course not. It's just wiped. So we have to start from scratch. But all you do basically is turn it back on, get it back onto the network. It's like a brand new phone. So they can't access the data.
Right.
So the thieves can't access the data. They've got a free phone. But then all you have to do is reactivate it on Bez, and it downloads everything from Bez again. And so they're back up and running immediately. So that's the beautiful part about it, is that there's a backup there, and somebody can't get at the data. So it's a wonderful way of doing it. And Apple just isn't there, unfortunately, with it.
And I'm sure right now Dennis is thinking, okay, so based on all that, even if a customer doesn't want any of the Bez features, they should be on Bez just for the security.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah, I always recommend.
There you go.
So again, I always say to my clients in the 25 words or less, normal speak, if you're into serious business, you need a BlackBerry.
Yep.
If not, if you want more media and a more personal device, get an iPhone. Because they always ask me which one I should get. And also, if you're a hardcore email fanatic, get a BlackBerry.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yep. Absolutely. Well,
that's it. I just looked it up. In the even in version 3, if you go into the options under .Mac, there's a little option in there where it tells you which options that you can sync, like mail and contacts and calendar. Right at the very bottom, there's a feature called Find My iPhone. And if you switch that off, then you can't remotely wipe it. So, I mean, that's ridiculous. You shouldn't have that ability to do it on the phone, because then a bad guy can do it.
Wow. Okay, so that's why I'm not on .Mac. Because I don't think I have that option on my iPhone. And I'm just on Exchange. Okay, good stuff. Wow, that's just a huge load today of nothing but security good stuff. But we do got to end this on a really exciting and a really neat note. And I don't know if you've seen this at all, Dennis, but this is something that our guest Matthew Shepard today sent in as a link. Passwindow.com, a revolution in authentication, easy to use, hard to break, and it's affordable. And for those of you who are listening to an audio version only, what this basically is, as is illustrated right on the front page of passwindow.com, is a physical card, looks like a credit size card, that you pull out of your wallet, and then what you do is when you're prompted with what almost looks like a CAPTCHA kind of except you can't recognize the characters, you hold the card over top of some characters that are displayed on the screen, and after you hold the card on top of it, the numbers behind it display. So it seems like a neat concept.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, because it's a static, I imagine it's a static card, how difficult is it to just reverse engineer that and duplicate that?
That's what I thought it was an amazing idea. But the only problem is, not like any other two-factor authentication where, you know, it's creating, like with RSA, you know, you're getting a different key every 60 seconds. So even if somebody sees yours, they can't copy it. YubiKey, same thing, they can't copy it. Whereas this thing, all you would need to do is photocopy it. And then you get the exact size, and you get the, you get the exact layout, and then all you'd have to do is take that photocopy and hold it up to the screen. So it's a good idea, but it's certainly not foolproof.
Is that true, Matthew?
It does mention that it's got a coating on the card, so you can't take a photograph of it. Don't know about photocopying, but they've certainly thought of a few different ways in which, you know, this could be broken, and have protected against it, so it can only be viewed from certain angles. You can't take photos of it. And I believe also the pattern on the screen, you can get like an animated pattern, so it's not just giving you one image that's going to create a password. It will give you a number of images that will tell you, you know, who you're dealing with, then give you a password, so to give you some kind of feedback and confirmation. Certainly from reading through the site, they seem to think this is, you know, going to be very hard to reverse engineer and replicate, but pretty much, you know, if anyone tries hard enough, I'm sure there would be a way, but it looks like a very simple means of security, and it would be very interesting to see how it fares with some of the bigger players like banking sites.
Yeah, no, I agree. I read some of that about how they're saying it's difficult to copy, but I mean, there would be, because it's something physical like that doesn't change. You certainly could. I mean, it may be that you've got to use a filter of some sort on a camera, like a UV filter or I can't remember what the name of it is. Those other filters that you can turn and you can get rid of ambient light. Any one of those type of filters, I'm sure that one of those would be able to copy it.
Yeah, I mean, it does depend. I mean, it's still, I would say, a fairly decent grade security because its copyability, if that's a word, is limited to someone having physical access to the device. It's analogous to a physical key to your house. There are times when you leave your keys on a tabletop somewhere and arguably somebody could go and duplicate the key. Or you give a key to your children, you know, they could go out and duplicate it without you knowing. That's certainly a possibility, but where I think it's a real strength, and in most cases, what a lot of two-factor authentication does now is it protects you from online virtual fraud. And, you know, someone at a distance in another country would have a real difficult time getting access to your physical key.
Yeah, it's another factor. It's a something you have factor, and adding that to something you know certainly increases security. So it's not a panacea by any means, but certainly seems like a good enhancement to just using passwords, just using the what you know authentication method.
Right.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, some of the banks now are even employing SMS messages where you have your own username and password, and then they send you an SMS.
Right,
you've got to type in that one. I mean, SMS is broken. You know, criminal organizations can get a hold of that information, but it's still two-factor. So it's much better than just having the password.
Right.
So the same thing with this is that it's way better than having just the password, but obviously it would have to be in conjunction with. And it's not as good as something like the YubiKey, but it certainly is a very good option.
Well, yeah, but it's you know, the technology on the user end is much easier than the YubiKey. You don't have to plug anything into a USB. All you have to do is basically hold it in front of the screen. So in terms of usability, I think it may be a good step forward just because, you know, for us, YubiKeys don't seem very complicated. But for some users, you know, it may seem a little bit more complex, whereas if this is something you just basically hold in front of the screen, quite an interesting concept anyway.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good, really good submission, Matthew, and I'm excited about it because I think, if anything, any new security option for a multi-factor authentication will just help raise everyone's attention level more about how important it is to have multi-factor in every kind of a scenario, no matter what happens. And, you know, I would imagine the cost of this card would be even cheaper than a YubiKey, right? If you look at YubiKey, buying them in volumes, you can maybe get them down to 10, 12 bucks a piece. But, you know, individually, they're 25 bucks a piece for the YubiKey. I can't imagine each card being more than, you know, buying them in volume than 50 cents, 75 cents max, you know, like a hotel key.
And that would be fully branded as well, one would think you could.
I would imagine so. And, you know, the other thing looks like, based on the image there, is that you might even be able to get them custom done. It might be cost a little bit more, but you can embed a picture of it. So it might even serve as a photo ID, might be able to combine it with other things. So it really is, I think, you know, something just on first inspection. That's all this is right now, is not a thorough security analysis, but on first inspection, I think it's really exciting.
Yeah, and I think it's an absolutely flexible solution. It can be used in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
Excuse me, but 1 second.
No problem. No problem. Well, well, folks, that's the end of our stories that we wanted to talk about today. I'm really glad you could join us. It's been a really, really good one. I'll tweet about this one, and as soon as we have it online, it'll be on blog.iwanttobeanerd.com. Soon to become iwanttobeanerd.com/blog. We were trying to gain extra search engine optimization value by standardizing to our domains rather than creating additional subdomains. So just be watching out for that kind of a change. Hopefully it's not going to break our that's going to break our existing iTunes subscriptions or any RSS subscriptions, isn't it? Unless we can keep the other old one running. Both. Can we do both? I think that's bad for SEO. You're supposed to have things in one place and one place only for best optimization. But anyway, we'll think about that. Folks, thank you very much for joining. And please do come back again next week. We'll talk to you all then. Say bye for now.
All right. Bye, take care, everybody.
Bye.
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 A nerd. It's great to be a nerd. We know the truth is out there, but we'd have to leave our room. We are the nerds in your neighborhood. Polyester's a fashion statement, but there's more room on the beach for you, 'cause we're locked in our basement. It's great to be a nerd. It's great to be a nerd. We like to wear colors that do not appear in nature. It's great to be a poorly dressed, fashionless, dirt tricking, role playing, 90 pounds, one with now PC skin, under fed genius, yes.